Welcome to the Good Mood Podcast. I'm Dr. Tali Mirkhajani, and this is episode 46, My Year of Being Bad with Ray. I think we're starving, not for food per se, but something else, something deeper, something perhaps more nourishing once you have enough food, of course, and this isn't negating nutrition and all of that, but we're starving for pleasure. A lot of us. And this can show up with low appetite. So I always think of that scene in The Matrix where they're eating that gruel porridge stuff. I mean, if you were eating that every day, you probably wouldn't be that interested in food anymore. We're hungry for pleasure and adventure and variety because we're often missing these things, or we don't know how to get them, or maybe we feel we don't deserve them. And so we go without and we start to lose our appetite, we start to lose our libido, our energy, and ultimately our vitality. And we might fall into patterns of despair and hopelessness or irritability and resentment. And I see this so often in so many of my patients who are just maxed out in their to-do lists. So Ray, whose name you may have guessed is a pseudonym to protect her and her family's privacy, noticed this. She noticed she needed juice. And so she spent a year being bad. And what does that mean? Well, I asked her what being bad means, and she responded, well, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, of course. And so right away, you can probably tell that this is a juicy episode. But it's also an incredibly inspiring episode because as James Hillman and Frances Weller say, pleasure is beauty personified. And it obviously starts with the body. Can you enjoy the feeling and the look of your own body? Can you recognize it as an element of nature, no more or less perfect than a flower, a tree, or a pond? Ray went on this journey, learning how to feel into her physical experience, to lean into life, to lean into pleasure. And she tells her story. She did this through exploring plant medicines and her sexuality, which took her to the world of erotica and kink. And so in this episode, we talked beauty, sex, spirituality, motherhood, embodiment, libido, pleasure, and many other things. It truly is a juicy episode. And I believe that no matter where you are on your journey, we could all learn to embrace body acceptance, to experience our bodies as a vehicle for our personal connection, pleasure, and adventure. And by learning to love and fully embody and inhabit our physical beings, we can learn to also inhabit our experience. So many of us are in the roles of working or serving others, putting ourselves and our needs last. And we feel spent, exhausted, unfulfilled. What would it mean to put down that bowl of gruel and serve yourself some delicious, spicy, gingery juice? Listen in and let's explore. So a little about Ray. Ray supports women and non-binary people to connect with their pleasure and power. These are your birthright. She's a facilitator, writer, and small eye intuitive. She draws on training and emotional body work, body psychotherapy, and health science. She's also inspired by her exploration of conscious kink, fantasies, and dreams, and sacred sexuality. Ray is dedicated to the healing power of Eros. You can learn more about her at her website, badgirlwisdom.ca. So listen in, let me know what you think, and I really hope you enjoy the juice. Okay, so being bad for a year, where did it all start?
It feels so juicy just hearing you say that. So I am in my mid-40s, and I had my second baby in my late 30s, and the first year of his life was regular intense plus a little extra intense. He just had some things going on, and I remember at a certain point in that, sort of going into deep surrender, just being like, this is going to be my life. I'm going to keep a part of me alive. I'm going to still do my creative projects, like literally on my phone, I'm going to do some writing while he's napping and I'm going to have good conversations. I'm going to meet like the moms I'm going to meet on mat leave are going to be real people. But like, this is his time and I'm here for it. And I feel like it kind of saved my mental health at that time, in the sense that I wasn't struggling against the reality of what was. And then there got to be a point when he was around two or so, where I felt that sense of, okay, like, you know, childcare is in place. I'm back, you know, I'm doing work. You know, there's like a different kind of rhythm. His sleep schedule is settling in. And it like started to create, it was a combination of that. And my partner's career was changing in a way where like there was more travel for work and there was more like more chance that he was getting to do some personal development work. And he was starting to create these spaces away from family life. So this feeling of jealousy that I had, which I find is like a really, a number of times in my life, I've found like the energy of jealousy or envy have been incredible guideposts for me to say they're getting that thing and I need it. And then instead of getting resentful, just getting creative about how can I get more of what I want? So it was that, like the feeling of like having given over my identity to my baby and starting to feel like I was coming out, and this envy with my partner, that's kind of where it started. And then, I was going to, like I was going to dance events regularly and I met someone who just kind of blew my mind. Cause I'm like a bit timid and a bit like good. Like I want people to like me and I've got a bit of a high voice and, you know, I'm just a little bit like, oh, I'm a bit scared, you know? And
sweet. And she, the nice
yeah. Yeah. And she was just so out there. Like the way she like moved in her body, like an animal, like, in a good way, like just moving and saying the things she wanted to say and living the way that she wanted to live and creating this career that like was like drawing in all these different areas of her life. And it was so inspiring. And again, I had that feeling of jealousy and also something more like this kind of zingy feeling, because she was, like she was bad, you know, like she,
yeah. What does bad mean?
What does bad mean? Yeah. It's like, am I allowed to swear on your podcast?
Yeah. Okay. Get us an explicit, but that's totally fine.
Okay. Like, just don't give a fuck what other people think of you. Like unapologetic. And also, like cheeky, counterculture, taboo, transgressive. Like one of the things that I loved about her was she's genderqueer and like would wear whatever she wanted to wear and just like have these different energies and just like, you know, like, and I was just like, oh my God, she's doing whatever she wants. So it was partly that, like this intense inspiration, this like, oh, like how can I be more like that? I want to be more like that.
It's like living without shame and living wild.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Living wild. Totally.
Like she's just like in her shadow, in her animal nature, in her sexual energy, which we're going to talk about a lot.
Yes.
But in just this freedom. And this is a dance gathering. So you're seeing this, like, she's really, I've been to those like conscious dance events and you can see even in my body, I feel sometimes repressed, like I'm judging myself. I'm really meeting that threshold between my restraint, my self-consciousness and my desire to be free.
Yes.
And then when you see someone who has none of that baggage, you can stand in awe of it.
Yeah. Or maybe there was baggage, but they've like just been like, I'm not going to let anyone, that thing that happened to me, I'm not going to let it define me. I don't know where they get it. like these more free people. But yeah, just like the way she moved, like it was, there was this kind of like a spring to it, this elastic quality, this like, and spontaneity. Spontaneity is such a big word for me. I feel like that's like being bad. Like it's partly the first definition I came up with was doing things that my mother would never do. So I was raised in a very religious household. Mm-hmm. And so that too, like the feeling of like all the possibilities in me that got shelved young, mm-hmm. like as a child, as a girl, as a teenager, all the things that I wouldn't let myself do or someone else wouldn't let me do, all those pieces of me that got like stripped away or lost. Like, I feel like, oh my God, like, I feel like I'm getting to have the second teenagehood, you know, mm-hmm. like, but the way that I want to, like, mm-hmm. no one else is giving me permission, but I'm giving myself permission for the first time, mm-hmm. to want the things that I want, to try out the things that I want to try out, to, and also I'm taking care of myself. Like, mm-hmm. like I have the boundaries in place now that I didn't have as a teenager, like where I did get myself into situations as a teenager in my early 20s that I felt really yucky about afterward. And this time around, like this experience of being bad, I haven't had those. I haven't felt yucky because in every case I've been listening, does my body say no? Does my body say yes? Is this fear response that I'm having an excitement fear response? Or is it a fear response that says, no, don't go in that direction? You know, like this quality mm-hmm. of discrimination that's in place for me mm-hmm. now.
Like a complete, yeah. Like, cause you know, when, well, even the socialization of the word bad is like wrong. I like immediately I would assume like it hurts other people. It does damage.
Oh yeah.
But I always remember I had a conversation with a therapist I was working with and she drew me this squiggly shape. So it's like a squiggly closed circle. Yeah. And then she drew a circle around it. And she's like, all these pieces that go outside this perfect circle were parts you weren't allowed to be.
Yeah.
And all the parts that go inside the circle yeah. were filled in and you were told you weren't enough and you had to compensate for. And this is what happens. We become this round circle so we can fit in the round circle hole we're supposed to fit into, and all of our interesting, wild, special parts, or the parts that we don't have because we just don't, or we don't want them, or we don't need them, mm-hmm. need to get filled in. Mm-hmm. And so we're constant, and this is where like self-worth stuff and that restrained feeling, and we tame ourselves, mm-hmm. we tame ourselves. Yeah.
And, yeah. Did you say restrain or you said restrain ourselves, right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. That feels so true. Like, I think too, like for me, I really resonated with one thing that you said, or I sort of heard it in my own way, which is like the feeling of being too much. Like that has been a plague of my whole life, that I was considered too much. And it's come into so many of my friendships and relationships. And so this like being bad has been like taking the lid off the part of me that wants too much, that is too much. And finally, like making room in the world for myself to be all of this muchness, you know, and it feels so much better.
Yeah. It's like the too much, not enough complex, you know, and yeah, if you're like, I can be so expansive, but I've been closed, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like with this individual that you saw, you were like, whoa, this is somebody who's just expanding past the bounds of the circle that someone drew for them.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What happened when you, so you're dealing with this feeling of, okay, I really, raised in, raised with these sort of ideas about myself, like what I'm allowed to be, what I should be more of, etc., the shoulds, and then having really sacrificed a significant amount of time as a new mom, where it was really single focus, took a lot of energy and attention, really like became your life, but an acceptance with that, like it seemed like you were like, okay, this is just how it's going to be. And then seeing your partner have his freedom, mm-hmm. and be like, oh man, I really want that. Yeah. Like, totally. And I deserve it, you know, because that's what jealousy usually is. Yeah.
Right. And yeah. How can I make that happen? Like, I'm still breastfeeding. I'm still like, I'm quite local, you know, I'm like, to some degree, I'm fixed in place. So how can I make my world bigger? Like right here in the place that I live, like how can my city become like this other place that I didn't even know existed? And I think like, you know, like what is being bad? Well, like sex, drugs, and rock and roll, like that, that pretty much covers it. although I also think like for me, there's, my witchiness, my weirdness, like went in that category, like everything about me that's really intuitive. Everything about me that's, yeah, just like that I know more than I'm supposed to know, or that I feel things that I'm not supposed to feel, like, so that kind of the witchiness. And then also like the gender specific stuff around women aren't supposed to be angry. Women aren't, you know, and when we're supposed to like be peaceful, but we're not actually supposed to accept ourselves the way we are. We're supposed to like act accepting, but not be accepting. And we're also supposed to be very productive. Like, so some of those categories too, of what makes a good woman or a good, like a productive person in society, like that goes into the category for being bad, of being bad for me, like as I come to think about it more. But like when I, the first thing that I did was just like in one of the moms groups that I'm in on Facebook where that I really like where there's more real talk. I just put this post and I was like, okay, like, I need more of my life back. I've been so nice. I've been so loving. I've been so supportive to everybody else in my life. And now I want something. I want to break free. I want to feel a sense of adventure again. Like another part of it was like being 40 and getting to this point where on one level, it sort of felt like I had done all the things, you know, like I had traveled to some countries. I'd had a long-term relationship. I'd had children, you know, like I'd done all the milestones, and there was this weird sense of, is this all that life has to offer? You know, have I really done all the things? So I just got this feeling of like, what if I started doing things that I think of as bad, or that my mom would think of as bad.
I love that definition. It's like stuff my mom wouldn't want me to do. Yeah.
So I created this. My first list is this: get a tattoo, try magic mushrooms, sign up for a tantric sexuality workshop, get a Brazilian, go to an anger room and break some shit, take a pole dancing class, go on a date without wearing panties.
This is lots. Can I just ask like possibly a personal question, just because it connects to a lot of what I think people listening probably are experiencing, like before all this?
Yeah.
And feel free to answer as you want, but what was your libido like?
Good question.
Because I think like low libido is this pervasive symptom that so many women feel. And all the things you're describing are very like, they're like, some of them are simple, right? It's like the Brazilian, but it's this really like sacral chakra, you know, activity. It's like, right. I want to free something in the pelvic region of my body, you know? Yeah.
That's a great insight. So at that point, my libido would have been, low, medium. I have a fairly sex is important to me. It always has been. But for sure there were complications around like having my body be feeling changed, you know, having the complexity of, you know, young children always makes things difficult.
Like the hormonal changes,
yeah.
Your body's not yours either. Like you're breastfeeding, you're like yeah, you can't attend to your own physical needs because your baby's needs come first.
But I think too, like, I've heard people talk about a relationship between the hormones of coming into adolescence and the hormonal shifting that can happen around perimenopause. And I don't know if that was in play at that time for me. I kind of don't think so, but I do remember feeling so connected to my 13-year-old self. Like, you know how when we talk about reparenting, we often talk about, think about our young children, like our infant selves or our small children. But as this, as these feelings were starting to come up for me, this desire to be bad and be connected to the lost parts of me, the taboo things, it was quite, I really felt connected to my 12, 13, 14 year old self, like this very, this budding, innocent, you know, just about to like fearful, you know, just sort of like coming on to this new scene. Like I felt so connected to her and how I wish I had been seen and wasn't, and how I wish I had been encouraged, and, you know, how I wish I had had more sense of autonomy and choice and boundaries.
That's great. 'Cause I think a lot of that therapy that takes you back. Yeah, you're right. It's usually like the pre-7-year-old inner child. But I also have had that where there was something really interesting around the 13-year-old self that felt almost more formative in terms of wounding than what I could remember from young childhood. You know, I don't know if that's always true for me, but it definitely, yeah, there's like a lot of, there's an energetic center there in the 14-year-old, you know, the 13, 14-year-old. So that's, yeah, I love the idea of the second adolescence. Like I've heard that a few times. I was part of this feminist art group a few years ago, and one of our leaders had struggled with a very significant eating disorder. And as she's recovering, she's like in her mid, late 30s, as she's recovering from it, she's, and menstruate, there's all these scenes around menstruation, because she's like, I didn't menstruate for years and years and years. So there's this celebration, she's a performance artist. And she's like, I feel like I'm reliving my adolescence, because in my adolescence, I was just restricted. Like I didn't feed myself. I wasn't there. I was sick. I was dealing with this illness. And so now I have to, it's like, I'm going back and going through it in the way that I wish I had
directed
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah. And that's so cool. So you had a list.
I did have a list, and I didn't do all of them, but I did a bunch of them. I didn't get a tattoo, but what I did is I ordered a bunch of long lasting temporary tattoos so that I could kind of play with it and try them on different areas of my body. And it was really sensual. It gave me something like to put, I put a tattoo on my breast. I put a tattoo like on my inner wrist. Some of them were words that were meaningful to me. Some of them were images. And there was just something about being inked, like for the first time in my life, even though it was temporary, that gave me access to like a more sensual, and a little bit more wild part of me.
That's so cool. That makes a lot of sense, actually. Like I had a temporary tattoo. I was in Costa Rica, and one of the people I was traveling with had this sort of, wasn't really henna, but it was this sort of temporary ink set. And I drew a picture of my dog on my forearm. And I forgot about it. And she's like, oh, that's going to last for 8 weeks. 8 weeks. I was like, oh, whoops. So I have this. But it was interesting to look down and see. And as you're moving your arm, to have this image.
Yeah.
It did have a weight, like it did have an energy.
Yeah.
And I got my nose pierced like kind of late, like late 20s. And same, it was just like, you're different. I don't know. Yeah. So very interesting.
Yeah. I felt like it was a way of, as I'm listening to you, like it was a way of talking to myself about myself in a way that was both very private, especially if there were, you know, things that I kept under my clothing, or some I would wear I would put them in a place where I could choose if I wanted to wear clothing that was like a little more body conscious or had less coverage, then I could share a bit of that skin, or I could keep it for myself. And that feeling of doing this thing for myself that was kind of private, but also kind of public, there was something about that that I found so cool. Edgy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And it's, they're not even like permanent tattoos, but you still got this vibe. And yeah. And there's.
Yeah. And I feel like I will maybe one day, maybe, maybe not. I don't know.
But that's cool that you got those, like, you know, you got those effects. Like it had this energetic shift.
Yeah.
Without it necessarily being this big permanent thing. Although it could be, I mean, tons of people, I don't have any tattoos, but you know, like it's not like it's not a thing. Like people get them, but it's so interesting that just sort of decorating your body.
Yes.
Had this huge effect.
Totally. And what you were saying about like the Brazilian and paying attention to that region, I ended up not getting a Brazilian because I got whatever the thing before that. That's not so intense. And it was so freaking traumatic physically. Like I just have very sensitive skin. But it was still like that experience of like going to a stranger and being exposed and doing this. And I think too, like my mom was a rural person. Like she grew up without any kind of, like not a lot of decoration and not a lot of grooming. And I definitely feel like for me, there's a ritual act so if I maybe have got an essential oil that has like a lot of cinnamon and stuff in it that I like to rub into my lower belly, like just doing things that feel sensual for me. Like if I was preparing myself to go to a special event, like I did do a tantric sexuality workshop. I did another workshop at Good For Her, which is a wonderful sex positive toy workshop resource in downtown Toronto. And I did a couple of workshops there actually. I did one on like intro to bondage and learned how to tie some knots. And I did one that I really loved called Awakening the Temple Priestess. Because I think another thing for me is that because of my Christianity, I feel like my sexuality and my spirituality got split from each other in a really damaging way. And I think part of what I'm going through is like is this process of reintegrating, like let my spirituality talk to my sexuality and let my sexuality talk to my spirituality. And so, you know, if I'm going to a special event like that, preparing my body by, you know, choosing, like I got new lingerie for the first time in this being bad period. That was part of being bad, like going to an actual real grown-up lingerie store, not in a mall, and like having a consultant measure me and like trying on gorgeous stuff, you know, like stuff with metal, stuff with leather or different textures, stuff with latex, stuff like beautifully, like just, I mean, you can see that. I'm just running my hands down my chest here because just like it's so sensual and choosing pieces that I felt like that I enjoyed wearing that just like that sensual experience of wearing things that feel good against my skin. And again, it's like it's underneath. It's all for me. Like what I do with my intimate hair, you know, like what I put on my body, what I'm wearing underneath. A lot of times no one was going to see that. It was just for me to put my own self in a mood, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To just know. That's what I have a friend that described that same thing. She's like, yeah, it's just, you just walk differently. You hold yourself differently because you know that it's like you have this secret that no one else knows kind of thing. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Changes confidence and what we're talking about, these energetic shifts. Yeah. From connecting to your body in a different way.
Yes.
And yeah. Can you say more about the connecting the spirituality and the sexuality, like maybe a bit about the workshop and what that meant, what that
was
like?
Yeah. I love that workshop. It started with a circle, and the teacher had been trained in a matrilineal shamanic line and had been given permission to share smudge with the circle. So we began that way. So, you know, there was already the circle and the smudge. There was a sense of sacred in just the way the container was set up. And then like going around in the circle and everyone shared something into the circle about why they were there. And she, Shahrazad, the workshop facilitator, talked about like the history of women's access to the holy, to the divine, and how there have been temples to the goddess, and how, you know, we still carry that inside us, but so much has been taken away, like the destruction of the temples so matches that what's been taken from us as women through sexual violence, through patriarchy. And she did this really beautiful exercise with us where she had us visualize facing ourselves. So here I am, and here's this other me, and I'm looking at myself. I'm taking myself in. And then she asked us to imagine the one looking becoming very small so that the one looking, this witness, me, could look at the shape of my own body as if it were a landscape. Like, you know, walking toward the entrance of my vulva and just seeing that shape, you know, and the way, you know, my mound and my belly and my breasts, you know, just the shape of me up from that. And I could really feel the magic of it. Like, I don't know, maybe you can too. I can feel it in the room again right now. Like, the magic of what it is like to see myself in the same perfection that I would if I were looking at the natural environment, you know, without all the pressure that's put on us culturally to fit a shape that we don't actually fit. So there was something really beautiful about that. And I think, like, you know, learning some tantric breath work and also just practices of surrender for me, like this feeling of opening that feels like I'm saying yes to life, and there's a deep embodiment, there's a sensuality, like a rolling, you know, undulating quality, and there's also like an opening to greater spirit, greater life force energy. And as those things started to come together for me, it was very healing.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's like as above, so below. It's like we don't expect a flower to be this like specific mathematical ratio. And yet we want to achieve some sort of silhouette in our own bodies we superimpose sexuality, yeah, and that sort of sexual appeal and then the aesthetic,
yeah,
this mold, again, it's that circle thing. And what you're sort of, it's like, yeah, it's an uncovering the truth of nature has curves and different irregular shapes, and
mm-hmm,
and that signals fertility and sensuality and sexuality,
yeah,
and attraction. Like you can even, I was just sensing like this feeling of attraction to your own shape, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so interesting. Yeah, like finding the divine in that.
Yeah. Yes. And I think self-pleasure is connected here too. Like, as women, like giving ourselves permission to do something that's just for me. And for me too, like, changing my relationship with it so that I'm not just doing it for stress release or, not even just because I'm horny or bored. All those are great reasons, but also sometimes bringing in this other thing that's curious, exploratory, slowed down, you know, like that has a sense of ritual to it. That's been really lovely for me, and to try to spend, to create openings for myself so that I move through the world with pleasure present in my body. So like that could be as I become aware of my hips as I move, as I feel the sunlight hitting my skin and my body, letting myself notice who I'm attracted to when I walk by people, just keeping part of my awareness like in my pelvis as I move, so that I'm constantly inviting pleasure, whether I'm like doing anything or not, like just as I'm being, just as I'm moving, and having this experience of like more constant pleasure moving in my body has been lovely. Like soften, like it creates, like I feel softer. I feel more available to my life, and I'm happier. Like it's nice to feel good, you know?
You're like bringing your energy and awareness down.
Yeah.
To your body instead of, like, we all kind of live in our, not even head, but our head cloud.
Right. Yeah.
And I was just reminded of some things that Francis Weller, have you heard of Francis Weller? He's a Jungian psychoanalyst, but mostly follows James Hillman's work. Like he's sort of this new Hillman. And he talks about beauty as this, and pleasure is like the embodiment of beauty, like the appreciation of it. And this idea of aesthesis, like taking in, breathing in the experience and taking it into yourself. And it's like when you're walking by a beautiful person, or you're feeling the physical sensation you're feeling the physical sensation of sunlight, or just being in your own body, and you're like allowing that in to the soul.
Yeah.
Instead of this sort of like to-do list and tasks, and there's like a sense of like being like immersing.
Yeah.
Being in it.
And I've always had an ambivalent relationship with my physical appearance, including the part of me that wants to be beautiful, look beautiful, feel beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that has significantly resolved for me over the past couple of years, in the sense of like what I've realized is I was trying to look beautiful, and I do actually want to feel beautiful, and they're two totally different things. And for me, feeling beautiful has more to do with like being filled up, giving myself permission to, I don't know, just like not be embarrassed about the things that I want. So choosing clothing that I like the way it looks, like fits my body and feels on my body, textures that I like, having my hair the length that I like in a way that makes it feel sensual for me. But all those things are just supportive. Like they're just like slight gateways, you know, but for me, it's more about, it's like the inhabiting of the experience of being beautiful, which I think for me is like, it's like feeling my own light. Like we all have a light, mm-hmm. you know? And when I feel my light and let it glow, mm-hmm. like I am beautiful. Mm-hmm. And you are, mm-hmm. you know? And there's like this alive quality. It's like, this is who we're made to be, like to really shine as ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so being able to separate this out, this like weird kind of pressure, I want to look beautiful because, mm-hmm. you know, it influences people and it makes me feel better about myself on a lower scale of self-esteem type stuff, you know? Ugh. And now just this like, desire to reconnect with the experience of feeling beautiful, which is really just about my light.
Yeah, it's like this radiance, like radiating yeah. something, yeah. some life force, soul energy versus.
Yeah.
Can I read some of the Frances Weller? I think it'll be quick. Sure. But because it's so on point with what you're saying, it's like so. And there's this thing like we hear beauty and there's immediately an evaluation. Is it beautiful or not? You know, and then it's confusing because some people are like Scarlett Johansson's not beautiful. And you're like, what are you talking about? We all have this taste, you know, and, but that's not what it is. It's like this idea of like, this aesthetic approach. Okay. So he writes like, there's a possibility that life possesses beauty already in the way you are right now, taking an aesthetic approach to whatever is happening in our life. Rather than moralistic, and the moralistic is like the right, wrong, good, bad.
Yeah.
And when you're looking at a painting or being moved or touched or affected, rather than evaluating if it's good or bad, learning to appreciate. And he's like, appreciation is an aesthetic term. It's like, how is something affecting you? How is it moving into you? Not evaluating whether something is beautiful or the quality of it, like beautiful or not, but the capacity to respond to the world by taking in beauty.
Yeah.
And the response, like the taking in, the aesthesis, the breathing in of the beautiful thing allows us to register what's happening in front of us. And this beauty so pierces us that there's like this aesthetic arrest that our heart is stopped, or we gasp, or we stop breathing.
Yeah.
And our whole body is taken by the moment. And in that moment, there's a communion between myself and what I'm taking in. Mm. The gap between us disappears.
Yeah.
And the beauty that we're taking in and digesting slowly becomes us.
Oh. So,
you know, even when you're gazing at your own form, you can have that experience, you know, and it doesn't have to be that Instagram hot or not, like you're taking in the natural beauty of your form as a person.
Yeah. It's deeper. It's not ego at all. It's like so much deeper than an ego.
And that's it. I mean, he's basically like, beauty is the way in which the gods touch our senses, reach the heart, and attract us into life. And what calls you so fully into the world other than beauty? You know, and it's like, what does? Like, what is there? This feeling, you know, when you describe, you're like, what else is there? Like, I've traveled. I have a long-term relationship. I'm a mom. You know, have my career. What else is there? And it's like, beauty, communion with beauty.
Yeah.
That's what calls us into life. And how do we open ourselves to it?
I think too, like, as I experience, as I'm listening to your words, there's a feeling of like a dissolving quality between, like, often between me and the world. Mm. And I feel like a connection between that and also this inner dissolving between how I am to be, how I am meant to look. So there's this performative part. And then as I think like my year of being bad has just helped me like more and more slip into who I actually am. So there's this more like this transparency in me between like the outer world and the inner world, because I'm letting myself be part of nature more, you know, like by letting myself want the things that I want and like try out new experiences and, you know, like, and when I'm truthful to myself about myself, then I'm more available to life as it is too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're like in it. And then at the same time, you mention different boundaries than what you had in the first iteration of adolescence.
Right.
Yeah. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Well, in adolescence, it was more like, who is attracted to me? I was more experiencing myself as an object rather than a subject, I think. So what the pull for me was getting the attraction, and that's part of it. And then there was also this, I don't even know where it comes from, man. It's so insidious, but this sense of like I am to serve men. So if a man wants me to do something, I have to do it. And it's so weird because I remember having like many experiences in my teens and 20s of feeling this inner compulsion, disgusting. But it was like this weird sort of like falling down a hole or getting sucked into a vortex where it was like, I don't want to do this thing. I don't want to do this thing. I don't want to be with this guy. I don't want any of this to be happening. But I was like, they didn't know. Like that's the other freaky thing. Although what I've learned now, like as I've, part of what I have explored is, like consensual, play in the kink world. So I've had a little bit of an introduction to BDSM, and the negotiation of consent is so beautiful and interesting. And what I've learned is that like when we're in good partnerships, we take responsibility for ourselves. Like we're ruthlessly honest about what turns us on, what we want, and that's allowed to change on different days or even on the same day. We let ourselves change. We let our yes turn into a no, if that's the truth. But in a really mutual, respectful negotiation, the partner is also looking out for you. You know, like there's a deliberate commitment to, is that an enthusiastic yes? Is there any hesitation in your voice? Like, it's a deep respect, you know, like nobody's having fun unless you're both having fun. So I've learned a lot from that because I've learned a lot about expressing what is really true for me. And then also a couple of times, like being on the verge of crossing my own boundary and a play partner catching it for me and saying, hey, I'm just noticing something's feeling a little different. Let me ask you that question again. Let's slow this down. I feel so moved by this, Talia. Like, because I didn't have that in my 20s. So this negotiation of consent, like my part of it, my self-responsibility, and a partner's genuine vested interest in my okayness, my enthusiasm, my desire. Both those things feel beautiful and important to me.
It's like this deep trust that somebody's committing to in that moment. Like I'm this real sensitivity to exactly what the agreement is and feeling it energetically, like being really attuned. It's an attunement.
Yes, attunement.
Yeah, wow. That's such a, how did that feel to have that, to have that person almost be a safety net or to advocate for your boundary.
Yeah, it was amazing. I was really moved by it. And I also noticed Like, there's two encounters that I can think of, and in both cases, the experience went from internally me slightly holding back and maybe even slightly dissociating to, once the boundary became clear, like, today I don't want this. Once the boundary was in place, and it was a boundary that pulled back, like, from a previous, you know, experience. So it was like, there was more no, there was less on offer. But once that was really clear, and the connection and the play happened just within that playing field, it was like, it was electric. It got so much hotter, like, because I could have my full yes, now that I knew where my boundary was, I could really, really enjoy the thing that I wanted to be have happening. And the other thing was that the boundary itself was really fun to come up against, as my partner very respectfully edged but didn't cross that boundary, you know, incredibly erotic.
It makes a lot, I've never thought of it this way, but it makes a lot of sense, because it's like, you don't have to invest any energy into protecting, into protection.
Right.
It's like negotiated, and you know, like, if somebody starts encroaching on a boundary, we immediately tense, stress response goes up, because we assume it's about to be crossed.
Yeah.
But because this deep trust is established, where even the partner stood up for your boundary.
Yes.
You're like, I know that this person's not going to cross it. And so we can play in this area that feels kind of dangerous, but I know I'm safe.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, cool.
So cool and so hot.
And we have so many, like, I guess, yeah, I mean, even putting kink and BDSM into the category of bad, right? It's like, but you're like, this is it sounds like it can be a truly corrective experience for I don't want to necessarily even say sexual trauma, but like, even those moments when we felt powerless, or, you know, even if it was a small p powerless, or boundaries crossed, or when our nervous system went into stress response mode, like dissociation, like you said, or fight or flight, and not trusting some part of our own sexuality, the sexual experience, or partners, and to, like, experience that, where it's like in therapy, when, you know, you have corrective experiences with attachment, where your therapist holds space for you, or doesn't abandon you, or continues to stand for you, and you've never felt that before. Mm-hmm. It feels different to your nervous system.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
I felt that again and again in my experiences with kink, like, very, very healing for me.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Do you think, was your partner someone who had, like, a lot of experience in this world? Like, how were they able to know that and sense that?
Totally. I only, as a beginner, I only choose partners who are very experienced and who have a very clear ethic, you know, and the first conversations happen, like the negotiation of what a scene will look like, what's going to be included and not included, what types of, you know, do I want impact? Do I want sensation? Do I want, you know, is there any language that I like or don't like? You know, all those things. And it can be done in a way, it can be done in a way that's still sensual. It can be part of foreplay, even though it's very distinctly a consent and boundaries conversation. It's amazing when it's done well. Like, it, you know, it gets things started. It's like, yeah, it's a kind of flirtation in the dance. And yet it's also, you know, the eye contact, the learning each other's signals, what means more, what means less, what means too much, what means stop, what means I really like this, you know, like all those things, and taking the time for it and making it explicit ahead of time, That's been a huge part of the trust for me. But yeah, I don't like the choosing partners carefully has been incredibly important. Part of the teaching that I was given, and also part of my own personal instinct.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it starts off verbal, like it's very explicitly stated.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
I'm thinking of, how does one know? Like, is it through that conversation that you start to think about what you would like? Like, I can imagine. So even that, what you articulated about seeing your sexuality and sensuality as being an object in a sense. And I think a lot of people have the experience of relating to sexuality as like what turns my partner on and that turns me on. And there's a lot of fuzziness and blurriness around what do I actually want? Yeah. Was it that process of like walking down the street and being like, who do I think is hot? And like, and what do I want? Or were these things happening together?
Oh, interesting. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I think. Oh, yeah. So yes, the walking down the street. Also, reading erotica was incredibly helpful for me. It started happening fairly early in my year of being bad, like choosing out authors of erotica who are feminist and progressive and very smart and thoughtful and still incredibly dirty, which I love. So like getting vocabulary from the inside, being exposed to things. And sometimes it's like, okay, I can be fantasized about that, but I would never want it to happen. Or like, wow, I think I might actually want to try that. So like, and erotica's can be well-written erotica is amazing because like it's an emotional experience. It's the story you're getting to inhabit. Mm-hmm. Like it would often happen that I would identify more with one character or another. Like there's often, two or more, central characters in a piece of erotica. And I would often sort of be like, okay, I more feel like that one. I've got a bit of that too, So that, like that exposure to things that I didn't even know existed.
Yeah.
That was part of it. And then also, Shahrazad, the one who I mentioned giving the workshop at, Good for Her. She is also a professional dominatrix. So when I followed up with her after the workshop and told her a bit about what was going on with me, she invited me to, they were having like a small open house at the dungeon. And it was like you bought a ticket and you could go. And it was like quite inexpensive. So I went and all the professional doms who worked there were present and they were offering tasters. So there was like a taster menu and you could like, incredibly reasonable. It was just like a little tapas menu of kink. Like you could, and you didn't have to do anything either. You could just walk around and be a voyeur, mm-hmm. and take it all in or you could. And so that was also something like, getting to see these things happening live in front of me, or just like, there are points when some of the doms weren't in a session. And so I had a chance to talk with some of them and you can just be like, okay, I've never heard of this word on the menu. Like, what is that? And, but definitely it was like, I remember kind of walking around, just letting my body, I said to myself, I don't have to do anything. And I can leave whenever I want. Like those were two really important rules for me. But I got there and I felt comfortable and I just let my body sort of choose, oh, like that looks interesting, or I feel intrigued by that or curious or moved. And I just let myself try some things there in that very safe because semi-public, and I knew that the head dominatrix, like, already had a trust with her because of the way she held space in the workshop. So that was a really lovely intro for me.
It's like someone that you already feel familiar with, and then just, and this exposure, like, just what's out there, what does my body feel like when I start to slowly expose? Because I think that's important what you mentioned with the erotica, where, oh, that's a hot fantasy, but I don't know if I want to manifest in reality. And sometimes there's that a blurry line between the two things. It's hard to know, but you got a chance to, like, maybe feel that on your body, different mm-hmm. scenarios and possibilities, and see, like, what does this feel like? You know, are there yeses on this path? Yeah. What are the authors that you read? I want to write them down. I want to put them in the show notes.
I will send you some names.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Because I think, you know, like, I dated a guy a few years ago. We would make fun of the Harlequin novels, and it was always the same formula. It was always, you know, some sort of, like, innocent girl and this ravishing, like,
cowboy type
Spanish billionaire. Exactly. Yeah. And then she was always just, like, innocent and just dragged along by her hair, you know, into these scenarios. And it was like, I was like, this is not hot at all. Like, we were making fun of it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but there's something with the narrative that's so much more appealing than the just imagery of, you know, something like porn. Like, there's something about the description, the language.
Yeah. And the inner experience, like being inside the experience of the person or people having the experience. Like, what are they thinking? What are they feeling? Like, being able to be so immersed in that experience.
Becoming the subject, not just like observing the object. You're like, I'm a subject in this experience. I'm involved in it.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. These are, like, also good practical tips for awakening the sacral chakra, the second chakra, right? Like, it's, which is also where we carry a lot of shame, and it's helpful to bring the energy out, like, shine light on it, you know, move it. So even for digestive health, and, like, fibroids, you know, even for those physical, right. You know. Tell me about the magic mushrooms. Was that something that got checked off the list?
I remember the first time. I haven't done it that many times. I'm really respectful of plant medicine and altered states, and mostly want to engage with that stuff too in a pretty ritual, intentional way. But sometimes, I'm having a memory of a group of friends at a cottage. There, you know, there was outdoor cooking. There was a pond. There were a bunch of kids running around, you know, playing soccer, water fights, and just the sensuality of taking this, like, low dose tea and having this experience of this beautiful day, like, of just being able to really take in the beauty of the day in a deeper way. And how, like, I'm a bit too serious. I'm kind of like an earnest person. And so for me, like, any experience that, like, creates, like, dissolving into laughter or, like, taking myself less seriously, those are super great things for me. And so the, like, drinking the mushroom tea with a couple of friends on a sunny day, and just having that, like, low dose, okay, I'm safe, it's a natural environment, I haven't, you know, I've gotten help with the dose so that I'm not going to get overwhelmed, but, and just be like, and just have that kind of rolling kind of, like, ooh, things are not quite normal, and like, how fun and how lighthearted I was, you know, like, how as spontaneous and easy I was with my kids, like not trying too hard and not like, that was lovely for me. And actually, there was a section of the COVID lockdown where I intentionally did microdosing several times a week. And it really was like mostly sub-perceptual, like just a dose that I could barely feel, but would sometimes just sort of like wave up into the barely perceptual, and just sort of like, again, that the noticing of beauty, the feeling of like my inner sense of time and time pressure being slowed down just a little bit, feeling like a little bit more playful, even though I was so worn out, like COVID had been going on for so long. Mm-hmm. And just like giving that me that little bit of second wind, like where I could tolerate being around my children, not just tolerate them, but actually enjoy them. Like it was magic mushrooms were named well for that experience. Yeah.
Can you just say a little bit about what microdosing is? Because there's a podcast episode we have on that, but just because, yeah, we've come back to mushrooms and talked about psychedelic medicines and plant medicines, but it's always great to hear like a real experience, like what you felt. And for the listeners, we can't obviously recommend or condone. I was confused, condone and condemn. Condone is the guess. We can't condone the use, but just this is your experience. And
yeah. So I won't have the numbers right, but there's a certain amount, like a kind of gram level where you're definitely having like a definitely altered, you're high, you're definitely high. It's an altered experience. And then there's a level like a tenth of that or something like that, where you're almost not altered, but there's just a little something. So that's what I was going for, like, especially as a parent with kids. So I'm like, I don't want to be altered, but I kind of want to be a tiny bit altered, you know, because life is not good.
Yeah. And the alter is like, you know, maybe like it would be like a glass of wine or strong coffee. It's not changing your decision-making. It's just like a little, it's a glow. A lot of people describe it as almost like sparkly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what I had learned was, I think there are different protocols, like 2 days on, and you know, you can do a couple days on and a couple days, but definitely the point is not to be doing it every day. And then there are recommendations about how many days to do it and how many days not. Either you can follow a couple of different people. I would say it was a positive experience for me. Like it definitely helped get me through some really dark times.
Mm-hmm. Just giving this like the sense I'm just hearing of like presence, maybe like of being able to be there with
without the weight of all the days who have come before, of how tired I already am. That's kind of what it gave me, like almost like fresh eyes, like, oh, here I am right now, as if for the first time with you. Sometimes it could be like that.
What am I reading right now? Why Yoga Works by Michael Roach. It's from yoga teacher training I'm doing. And it's such a good book. It's a narrative. It's like a story that it kind of takes you through the Yoga Sutras and these seeds. It talks about the seeds that get planted from our experiences and that we hold in our bodies and in our psyche, and that start to grow roots and that start to become, you know, our personality or our assumptions, our thoughts are. And so a new experience isn't just a new experience. It comes with the weight, like with your, you know, with your kid or with my dog, they start to do something and you know, it's going to be this and this and this and this and this. And you're going to feel like the way you felt the last 10 days in a row where it happened. But when you sort of strip that, it just, it's a fresh moment and it's a different thing. Yeah. It's not bad or good yet.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just,
yeah.
It doesn't mean all the things that it usually means, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because you mentioned, so this year of Living Bad, you said was 2019. So before it all went down, or I think, was it 2019 or was it was before COVID?
Yeah, so it started somewhere in 2018, mid 2018. Yeah.
And then,
I was planning on rolling it over into a whole decade, but definitely COVID has made that.
Yeah, you're like, it's basically a decade of living well. And I mean, because when we say like a year, we were like, oh, did you just take your COVID year and like, you know, make it bad? You mentioned before we recorded that it did extend into COVID. It changed possibly the, like what's been going on with COVID or since?
Yeah. I mean, I felt a huge amount of loss for sure because some of the specific events that I had been able to attend were no longer possible. And of course, actual live kink experiences with, you know, that became impossible. If we're following the public health recommendations, yeah, so I felt a lot of loss. So it was the kink stuff. It was the sacred sexuality workshops. It was ecstatic dance, which isn't specifically a being bad place, but is a place I've experimented with flirtation, like a little bit of, you know, different kinds of dancing that aren't my regular pattern, but you know, like bringing a little bit of bad girl into the dance for sure could happen. Mm-hmm. And that spontaneity of, like even like that little exchange glance in the subway or the feeling of the warmth of someone else's body heat sitting beside you and occasionally that can have a sensual impact for me, like all those things just so shockingly stripped away. And I felt really committed to trying to continue my experience of being bad, giving myself permission. You know, I've had to play more with, trying out new sex toys for myself. With a couple of the kink partners continuing to write to each other over text and sort of share fantasies, like, you know, either co-create a fantasy or share a fantasy and get to learn about the impact of that fantasy on a play partner. One time I went paddle boarding with a close friend, and once we were far enough out, we took our clothes off and did naked paddle boarding last summer. So even for me, that feels quite bad, like to be like naked in a semi, like, you know, no one can see me, but still I was out in nature in a public place. Like that felt bad to me. Like it gave me quite a thrill to do that. And like erotica. So reading erotica has continued to be something that, is sexy for me. And also I'm starting to write erotica. Mm-hmm. So that too, like letting my own erotic imagination have its play and doing creative things like hosting conversations about sex, like where I talk with other people about like what turns you on, what have you never tried but you'd like to try, what are some of your favorite sex toys, you know, just like having those conversations in a small circle, I found like both very moving and also inspiring. Like again, like having access to things that I hadn't thought of, or even just having those conversations, it's permission giving. It's a little bit bad just to be doing it. And then also I often found that my libido was affected by having those conversations, like just having those topics come into consciousness and, you know, having those images and possibilities like moving in me. I would often find that I had different feelings after a call like that than before. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to be creative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, especially when you've, done a lot of exploration in terms of like creating different communities and meeting different people that you meet in the physical space, you know, this like relational energy that helps you feel embodied. And when that, yeah, they said it gets stripped away, it's like, how can I, now it's just my body and my mind, and how can I kind of contain that? How can I maintain that relational space by continuing to have conversations, by bringing other people in, reaching out to other people, expression, like without other people physically around, you know? It's been a big challenge, I think, you know?
Yeah. But
especially when you've spent a year on that exploration journey in person.
Finally getting to be wild. Yeah. Finally letting myself out of my cage. And then
there's a cage. Yeah. And then there's like a legit, physical, or I guess like metaphoric cage. But that's great. I mean, those are, you're like maintaining that energy. Like, okay, so I can't physically be with people, but I can reach out to play partners and allies and people I've met, and I can read and I can write and I can keep this energy flowing.
Yeah, exactly. It is not, I would say it's like deliberate. It requires more cultivation. It requires more creativity. It's worth it, but that the ease, the momentum isn't there. And I have more sort of periods of collapse or lowness, you know, where I have to, but I feel this like ongoing commitment to myself. Like there were a couple of periods in my life where I felt like my libido was zero, or like my light kind of went out, you know, and, or went really like down to the little tiny coals at the bottom of the fire, you know, like, and I feel like I don't, that doesn't go, like, I don't let that happen anymore for long periods. Mostly, I just want to be gentle with myself, because I have had some, you know, mental health quite low spells during COVID, two in particular that were really challenging. And I just had to be really, really gentle with myself and hold myself to a different standard. And even like my own sexuality, I don't want to push myself. You know what I mean? I want to have the same respect for myself that I require of a partner. I want to be as patient, as loving, as understanding of ebbs and flows. And at the same time, I want to do the things I can to, you know, like get that fire going again.
It's a great analogy for everything, you know, because I think libido can describe sexual libido, but it's also just our outward movement to take things into us. So it could be appetite, it could be wanting new experiences, you know, physical experiences, sensual, like feeling different emotions, having different experiences come into our lives. You know, it's like our motivation. I think libido and motivation are very interlinked, if not the same thing. And we see that, like, yeah, like the coals go down to the embers, and you know, then shame can come in, like, oh, I should be going out more for walks, or I should be writing more, doing this project or that, or that was this whole theme of like, you don't have to capitalize on your at home time by writing that novel, or, you know, you might not feel it. And then at the same time, trying to nurture the embers a little bit, you know, with some creative things, like, it's been such a weird time for that.
It has been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as we move into spring, I feel like, I mean, I can feel the difference. There's light, there's warmth.
Yeah.
Nothing's really changed in what's open or not. I mean, a little bit, but there's some movement, like more people are out. It just feels more alive, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
Like as I was thinking about doing this podcast. I mean, doing this podcast is an act of being bad for me. Like, you know, I'm talking outside of my very close inner circle about these things that have been incredibly meaningful and quite private, you know, and it's an emotional risk. But it's something that I felt like I really wanted to do. And, you know, in the 2 days before doing this, I was like, oh, I want people to have some way of getting in touch with me if they want to know more about my journey, or if they want to like see some of the resources that have been really helpful for me. So like I was telling you this morning or yesterday, I like put together this website that you'll share with people, so that, you know, like it was a spark of creativity. It had a spring fever kind of quality to it. And you saw that the colors are very, you know, like and bright. And
yeah, I love it. It's so great. Yeah. And you talk about, like, do you want to talk about the website? Cause it's like, use like the metaphor of juice and then the elements, and it's great. Yeah. This tell us about juice.
Yeah. Well, this comes from, I think you've interviewed Allison Crossley on your podcast. I'm pretty sure I got that metaphor from her, or at least like in of all the people that I know, she uses that word more than anyone else. So I think I use it intuitively, but I also just love the way that she uses it as a way of tracking ourselves. Mm. Like, how juicy am I today? You know, like, I really love that. And I just get it intuitively. Like, how full do I feel? Full, juicy. It's just, so I love that. And I love it as a way of, like, is this working for me? Does this turn me on? Does this project get me going? You know, like, I think that our creativity, our career, our sexuality can be very closely interlinked.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, again, like all sacral chakra stuff. And like, when you start feeling just like that disgust feeling that, and like numbed out, and it's like, that's not juice. That's, you know, for like a task you have to do, you know?
Totally. It's gonna be dry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then also, like, in this exploration, we've talked a lot in this conversation about body knowing, like when there's so many different places in us. Like, you know, my no could be a clenching around my heart. Mm-hmm. My no could be dryness in my pussy. Like, you know, like, my yes could be a feeling of like my chest slightly expanding. It could be actually getting wet or feeling excited, you know, like there's so many places in me. So I'm really interested in like a very whole person approach to this, the wisdom of my bad girl, like how I've been reclaiming, bringing these like parts of me back to life, you know, and letting them be part of me, and now letting them be part of my conversation, how I make decisions, how I interact with other people. So this idea that that the elements for me, like fire connects to desire, and the wisdom of my body, and my body also has come to include my womb. So in the same way that I have had a long-term practice of checking in with my heart, what do I know in my heart? What feels right? What does my heart move to do? Now I have a practice of checking in with my womb. And it's really interesting. They have different voices. They have different wisdom. And I feel like I want to connect with other people to share this experience of womb wisdom and how it's distinct from heart wisdom. And I think too, the experience of the body as earth, the body as our home. And this feels connected to me with, I think part of what's happening for me is this return to my state. Like we said earlier in the part of the conversation about beauty, there's this more integration in me between who I am and my relationship with nature and the world. And I think that if we cultivate our experience of of pleasure and aliveness in the right way, that's not egocentric, that actually like dissolves us into more availability toward life. I think it actually helps us connect more to Mother Nature and ourselves as part of the ecosystem of life. And I feel like that's really important because we'll make better decisions mm-hmm. as humans, you know, if we make them as part of the ecosystem as opposed to users of the ecosystem.
We see nature as an extension of ourselves, which it is.
Exactly.
And then it's silly to harm it. It doesn't make any sense to harm it or to use it up or to take it. It's
totally.
Yeah.
I'm interested in relationships of all kinds. I'm interested in power and pleasure and the relationship between the two. I feel like a lot of women and non-binary people have had power, both power and pleasure taken from them, and the reclaiming of our birthright feels really important to me, to take those things back into ourselves and then allow them to fill us up, to have that juice. It allows us to go out into the world and be agents of change, like in our small circles. And then, you know, when we're ready, like have bigger conversations, take bigger actions. I think that, I'm just really interested in the idea that when I do right by myself, and even when I prioritize my pleasure, ideally that is also in service of something bigger.
Which is exactly the opposite of like the wrong, like what wrong should mean, which is that it's like harmful to usually others or selfish. It's like, this is the opposite. It's serving.
Yes.
A very genuine place. Yeah. And yeah. And I mean, yeah, I get a lot of emails from family members, partners, parents of potential patients. So the people asking for help for their loved one. And it's tough because the loved one is not reaching out. And it also just sounds like from our interaction that loved one isn't the one seeking help, and that their family member, the person asking for help, is really sort of trying to pull them along. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't usually work. I mean, I serve the patient, and the patient, if they're not, they don't necessarily need to ask, be the one writing to me, but they have to be the one asking. They have to be mm-hmm. on the journey, on the path. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I sometimes will say to the person writing, like, I mean, you know, what you can do is focus on yourself, like the self-care, you know, but it's hard because, I mean, yeah, we're not always taught that, or mm-hmm. doesn't always make sense that, and it kind of goes in hand. I have to be careful with that language, because it goes in hand with the change yourself to change others. It's not that, it's that you turn inwards, you focus on yourself, and that light, that radiance extends beyond you, you know? And you're not invested in changing others. It's more, I need to like get juicy to fill other people's juice jars.
That feels like a beautiful place
to end.
To wrap. I really love that metaphor of light.
Thank you so much for joining me.
What a pleasure.
Yeah, this was such a great convo. And thank you. So stuff we talked about, we'll put in the show notes, your website, some of the Good For Her. I'll put the link for that, because that's a really great organization. And then some of the erotica authors, if anyone wants to create a reading list for what's left of lockdown.
Totally.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me. It was really fun.